Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 125 with Tim Whitaker. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Tim Whitaker, we explore a number of interesting topics like Tim's love for writing, how Tim inspires students to write, the definition of thinking clearly, and how not to underestimate street smarts of your kids. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an amazing free resource for all listeners of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. It's the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. And that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you get the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am here with the founder of Mighty Writers, Tim Whitaker. And Mighty Writers was founded in 2009 with the mission to teach kids to think clearly and write with clarity. The organization offers free programs for students from elementary through high school at centers in four diverse Philadelphia neighborhoods, including one bilingual location for Spanish-speaking students. Mighty Writers offers daily after-school academies, long and short-term writing classes, nights and weekends, teen scholar programs, mentorships, college prep courses, and college essay writing classes. In addition to their main four Philadelphia locations, they hold on-the-road sessions at other locations across the city. Over 300 of the city's best creative minds, writers, teachers, journalists, etc., teach and mentor some 2,000 kids at Mighty Writers annually. President Obama's Committee on the Arts and Humanities named Mighty Writers one of the top 50 nonprofits in the nation. And the Philadelphia 76ers honored Mighty Writers as a hometown hero in 2014. NBC Universal named Mighty Writers a 21st Century Solution winner in 2016. Founder and executive director Tim Whitaker began his career teaching 5th and 6th grade in Philadelphia before becoming a writer and editor. He was the editor of Philadelphia Weekly from 1994 to 2008 and previously the editor of Philly Sport and Pittsburgh magazines. Whitaker was a head writer at NBC Radio and has written for the New York Times, Washington Post, and Philadelphia Inquirer. He's also the author of Crash, The Life and Times of Dick Allen. Tim, welcome to the show.
Oh, happy to be here, Dan. Thanks for having me.
So let's go way back when you were teaching 5th and 6th grade. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
You know, I think it was an act of desperation, probably more than anything else. It was, I graduated from college with a BA in generalities, and it was, not sure where I was heading or what I was going to do, and saw the opportunity to teach school in Philadelphia, 5th and 6th grade. So I did that for a couple of years, and truth is, I was not really that good at it. I was not, I was not mature. I had no experience. So, it was a really bumpy couple of years. But what I remembered is how much I liked the kids and how I liked their energy and their creativity and liked being around them. So, it all stuck with me.
Yeah, the energy, the creativity, that can definitely be contagious. And, when you catch that bug, it's something that hooks a lot of educators for sure in the classroom.
Yes, definitely. I went from that to being in journalism for 30 years after my 2 years teaching. So it was a long time till I was back around kids again. But when I left journalism and I was trying to think, what I wanted to do next, how I wanted to reinvent myself, I remembered how much I liked being around kids. And since the only thing I really knew how to do was write, it seemed like having a program, teaching kids how to write just seemed like the perfect thing for me.
What caused the switch from education and then getting into writing and being an editor?
Well, I think that, again, I think that education, I sort of just stumbled into it right out of college. I don't think it was a career choice. Journalism was, and writing was something that I really wanted to do and had my eye on. And, you know, if I'd probably still be doing it if journalism had remained a viable business. But, you know, I worked for 14 years at a newspaper called the Philadelphia Weekly, which is an alternative newspaper in the city, successful, large, weekly, big staff. And around 2008, 2009, I could see the writing on the wall. I went from meetings with staff writers about the kind of stories we were going to do to meetings with the owner about who I had to lay off. So it was clear that the print medium was in trouble and getting worse quickly. So, you know, I didn't want to be the guy who hung around the newspaper too long and whose job it was to let people go. So that's what led to starting Mighty Writers.
Yeah, and tell us the story behind that. So you it sounds like you saw the writing on the wall, the job, you know, the industry that you're in terms of journalism, it become challenging. You didn't want to be in the position of laying off people. And so you wanted to look for a viable option for yourself, and Mighty Writers was born. What inspired that? And you know, how has it even changed, I guess, from inception to now?
Well, there were a couple of things. One is that as a journalist, as a writer and an editor in Philadelphia, I had edited my share of stories about the literacy crisis in the city. You know, the dropout rate hovers around 40%. In the Latino community, it's more like 65%. And so, you know, this is a crisis. This is not just a problem. And so I was very acutely tuned into that as a journalist, as somebody who knows the importance of writing and who had reported on the problems in the city with literacy. So it was kind of in my face when I decided to leave journalism, what I wanted to do. And I heard about a program in San Francisco, was started by the writer Dave Edgars, called 826 Valencia in the Mission District in San Francisco. He had won a MacArthur grant and put the money into a program to teach kids how to write. So I went to San Francisco and checked out that program, and then came back to Philadelphia and did a business plan based on somewhat of what I saw and some of what I had in mind based on the kind of city Philadelphia is, very different than San Francisco, and got a startup grant pretty quickly. So, you know, we were off and running in 2009, much faster than I ever imagined.
Yeah, that's great. And then you started working with students. How do you inspire them to, I guess, fall in love with writing and make an impact there? Because quite honestly, writing is really hard, I think.
Yeah, writing is really hard. And you know, and as any writer will tell you, that they'd rather do almost anything else but write. the good feeling about writing always comes after the fact. And when you have written and you look at what you've done, and I think that's what really drives people that really like to write. But, you know, what we found very quickly was that there was great interest in the communities we serve. We have four writing centers in Philadelphia, all in disadvantaged neighborhoods. And what we found very quickly was how much the parents cared about the education of their children, how much they cared about writing. And then once the kids are in our centers, whether they wanted to come here or not in the beginning, you know, we saw it as our job to make the writing experience upbeat and fun. And we, you know, our sites are designed with superheroes and you know, lots of jazzy art and photos. So the spaces are really about them.
I don't know about you, but I had enough on my plate just thinking about how to operate a building and how to develop my people. That was enough. And that doesn't even include parents. That doesn't even include student issues. And it definitely doesn't include where am I going to find the funding to run all the great programs my students deserve. Well, the great news is I have an amazing free resource for you, the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. That's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. In this guide, you will be exposed to the best fundraising ideas for schools in 2017. And my favorite company that's described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. The reason School Spirit Vending rises above the rest is because they make fundraising so incredibly hassle-free. What if a company would come in, install vending machines with customized stickers? That's right, stickers that had your logo, that had your mascot, that had whatever you and your students wanted installed. They come in, they take care of the machines. You do no work besides having the machines installed in the school, and you get a cut of the profit. That's where you're going to find money to actually run these programs. So check out the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com and definitely give School Spirit Vending a call. Tell them Danny Sunshine sent you. And I hear this idea of superheroes, comic book characters, this nice art, maybe even jazz. But what are some other things you do, to inspire the kids?
Well, I think, the one thing that we've had real success with is that we have a staff of 11 and we have no offices. Nobody's got an office. So we're all embedded with the kids. So when the kids come to our centers, we're just on our laptops, which has a lot of really positive results for us. And probably the biggest one being we know what the kids are thinking about. We know what they're talking about. So we can design our writing programs around what's on their minds, not what's on our minds. So, that has been a huge asset. We do a lot of writing programs around music and around sports and around issues of the day, police brutality, whatever these kids are talking about or what they're hearing at home or on the streets, they bring into our centers and then we get them to begin to think about these topics and then write what they feel.
What would you say maybe are some of the most inspiring topics that you've seen kids tackle?
I think they're tuned in to the inequities of education in this country and how, that there are in the inner cities, the schools are failing these kids dramatically, and the buildings themselves are in disrepair, and the libraries are closed. There's no nurses. I mean, it's really a crisis. And 12 minutes outside the city of Philadelphia, in the western suburbs, they're some of the best schools in the country. So, I think addressing those issues is foremost on the minds of the kids.
Yeah.
And other issues as well, other political issues. And this past year, police brutality was a very big issue here. And how kids felt about that and all that. And as I think I said once already that, what we're really about is teaching kids to think clearly, because you can't write anything of value unless you're thinking clearly first. So we spend a lot of time with the kids before they even start to write, getting them to think about what they feel, having them test what they feel and verbalize it out loud, and try to punch holes in it so that by the time they're writing, they're writing with great confidence.
Yeah, that's such an important skill. And I can relate to what you're saying as a former educator and school leader within Chicago Public Schools. I've kind of seen it all as well. And anything from, like you said, police brutality to our kids sometimes would travel out to the suburbs, right? As like a sort of exchange program. The suburb kids would come into our schools to see what a day in the life of somebody the same age, how they experience their day-to-day within school. And the results were quite shocking, right? Between what people have and they don't have, and they're only separated by a few miles in some cases.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
So you were talking about thinking clearly. I'm intrigued by this idea and getting kids to be able to verbalize where they're at. You said to punch holes in their ideas so that they could then write with confidence. Can you define thinking clearly? What does that mean to you?
Well, I think it's before the kids begin to write, we ask them how they feel about the topic. So if they're talking about police brutality, for example, we'll ask them how they feel about that. And then if we detect or feel that they're falling into generalities that don't quite hold up or that don't add up, we will ask some follow-up questions. And often they'll have problems answering those questions. So, you know, we'll either send them to do some research on the computer, just, you know, as simple as Googling some of these topics, so that when they address these same issues again, they're standing on solid ground. That's really what Thinking Clearly is all about for us, is to know what you're talking about and be on solid ground.
What could we learn from Mighty Riders as school leaders in terms of how we should approach Thinking Clearly and riding within our schools, public and private?
You know, I think the biggest thing is to interact with the kids and hear what they're thinking about in all kinds of ways. So not just in formal classroom exchanges, but just in general to sit down with them and have them go on about whatever it is, whether it's, you know, last night's NBA series or what they're feeling about Donald Trump or, you know, whatever it is, they have, you know, a lot to say about these topics. And more times than not, we find that they are on the mark. They may need to do a little research to back up what their hypothesis is, but their hypothesis, which is often based on street smarts and just learning how to think on the street, which is, I think, greatly underestimated by educators, because you can learn a whole lot that way. So, you know, I think that I'm just saying the same thing a lot of different ways, which is, I think, listening to kids is the best thing you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. So you're the founder and director of Mighty Riders. How would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
You know, I was the editor of a number of publications before launching Mighty Riders. So in some ways, it's not unlike being an editor. That's the style, I think, is the same, which is, in my case, you know, I like to give people a lot of room. I like people that are smarter than I am. I like people that are ambitious. I like people that come to me with a lot of ideas. And, you know, I think that if when that's happening, when the staff feels that their ideas are being listened to and if they're solid, they'll be enacted. You know, I think you get the best out of people that way. I think micromanagement to me is a defeat.
And how do you get the, I don't know if it's the confidence, the wherewithal to surround yourself, right, with people that are smarter than you? Because sometimes, you know,
maybe it's not that hard.
Yeah. But, you know, when I coach school leaders, egos are very fragile, including my own. Right. Uh-huh. And I agree 100%. But for people that aren't there yet. Right. And they're listening and they're OK. I need to be the one with the answers. I need to be the smartest. You know, what would you say to them? Like, how did you learn that skill? Because I agree 1,000%. That's what you need to do. Be the, you know, least intelligent person in the room so you can learn from others. But how do you get there?
It's sort of a simple formula. If you surround yourself by people who are really smart or smarter than you are, and you give them a lot of room to do their thing and to succeed, all it does is make you look good. You know, it elevates you and you may not be as smart as they are, but you're the one leading the ship. You're the one whose style is allowing them to do their thing. So, you know, I think it's that people should look at it as, you know, it's a winning formula, and it's not, you know, having an ego about being the smartest person in a room isn't going to get you anywhere.
What would you say is your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
That's a good one. Leadership mistake. have to think about that one a little bit. I think that early on in Mighty Writers, I might have approached the whole notion of order and discipline in a way that mimicked school a little too much and may have not been the most successful way to go. I think that now we have a much more laid back, relaxed, yet focused, very focused style around Mighty Writers. Now, the kids we see after school and on weekends and nights, you know, we keep in mind that they've been in school all day already. So the last thing they need is to walk into another classroom atmosphere. So, you know, we lighten things up. You know, we get them focused on writing and what they're talking about, but we're doing it in a way that is very unlike the classroom.
I think that's a powerful thing to consider, you know, even for educators within the school day. When it's getting towards the end of the day, they've been in school the entire time. And I shared this a few podcasts ago, but a school leader friend of mine shadowed a student. And he found that the kid he was shadowing had four major tests back to back to back out of a 8-period day. One of those periods is lunch, right?
Yeah.
Probably one of those, hopefully, is PE. But, you know, 4 out of the 7 classes, at least, were having major tests. And I can't even imagine, right, the stress and even just the fatigue, right, that was set in from this type of demanding work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, the you can tell when you're around the kids, too. Yeah, I mean, you can tell as soon as they walk through the door what kind of day they're having and whether they're, you know, just overwrought with work. And a lot of the schools that we work with, you know, are not in the best shape, so there may not be any physical fitness, and you know, there's no library, so it's just classroom from, you know, 7:30 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. So, you know, we learned very quickly that, you know, we can't do more of that.
Over the past year, what have you been the most proud of accomplishing with Mighty Writers?
Overall, you know, I'm really pleased with how the kids are progressing and how they're the high schools they're getting into, the colleges they're getting into. I mean, the one specific thing that comes to mind is one of our sites is a bilingual site for the Mexican American community in Philadelphia. And we ran a writing workshop where the kids created comic books and told about how their families came to this country from Mexico. And it was incredibly moving, and the kids were, I thought, remarkably articulate and sensitive about what they were saying. And I was kind of blown away by that whole workshop. So that left a very, and especially now with immigration being such a hot button issue and deportation being such a threat, that you really got a sense of what these kids are, what they're living with, which is a whole lot for a 10-year-old child.
Yeah, absolutely. And then this morning, I should have talked to you before this morning, because I was trying to do some of the writing that I need to do. I have a goal of writing a book, and you know, I told you in the pre-chat, this is going to get released on December 27th. So hopefully by then, you know, it's been edited and available to the listeners of the show. But I was writing on empathy this morning. And what you're describing there with that workshop and the students that you serve and the issues that they face, you know, being able to understand that other person's perspective, and especially in a really challenging political environment for especially like a Mexican-American student, who knows what's going on with their family and if they're still together or if they're getting pulled apart, or there's so much that could be going on through that kid's life. And yet, as an educator, are you freaking out that they're coming 2 minutes late to your class?
Right.
Or that they did 7 out of the 10 problems? You know, you got to consider what is their experience outside of school. I just came from the principal's conference, which was in Philadelphia. And Jimmy Casas shared a story of, I think, as a young educator, he wanted to get this kid kicked out of his class, right? The kid was a really big stinker and just causing a lot of problems. And the principal brought Jimmy to this kid's home. They did a home visit. They met with mom or grandma, and he could see the challenging environment that the kid was growing up in. But then on top of that, after the conversation concluded, the principal said, you know, that house, the kid burned it down last year.
Wow.
And just unpacking, you know, like all this stuff that the family's been through, right? Because they went there to tell, the principal wanted Jimmy to tell the parent, like, you know, here's how your son's been behaving, right? And this is just one more thing, right? But there's so much more going on. And having that experience snapped Jimmy right into focus, and that kid became one of his favorite kids that he mentored and tried to really change his life, you know, and pour into, as opposed to how do I get rid of him? It was how do I help him?
Mm-hmm.
Just because of that empathy and that perspective.
Absolutely. And, you know, these Mexican kids that we work with, they are, you know, they're all documented. Most of their parents are not. So, you know, they've been told what to do if they come home and nobody's there, or if somebody's knocking on the door and they're the only one home, or where they should go. I mean, this is a heavy, heavy load for a kid to walk around with, you know.
Right.
So
child.
It's just a lot.
Yeah. Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcasts. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. Tim, what's one class we should add to our schools that's not currently taught that you know of?
Well, I think, you know, I can't speak for schools nationally at all, but in Philadelphia, it's clear to me that teaching kids writing is just not a priority in 90% of the schools. It seems to me that it's math and science and standardized testing, and maybe not in that order exactly. But if you know, if you can't write, if you can't express yourself, then and being good at math or science is not going to get you anywhere, because you won't be able to articulate your findings, you know. So getting writing in the curriculum to me just seems just critical. And it's just overlooked. It's a back of the bus deal. And how that happened, I'm not sure, but it really needs to be addressed, I think.
Yeah, as a former English language arts teacher and reading teacher, writing teacher, I'm going to put my stamp of approval on that one.
Good.
Do not cut from that program. And writing, it helps the sciences, it helps math, because going back to Tim's idea of thinking clearly, when you're able to understand your arguments and your claims and the rationale behind decisions, that benefits every single discipline and makes you a stronger, just intellectual.
Yeah, absolutely. And at Mighty Writers, we're not trying to turn kids into writers necessarily, although I think we're probably going to get a few along the way. But we're just trying to get kids so they can write a clear and lucid email or fill out an essay for to get into high school or to get into college, just to be able to progress in life. You have to be able to say clearly what you want and how you're going to do it. So that's our goal.
Tim, when you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
You know, this will age me, but probably Bobby Kennedy is the first one that comes to mind. And I think it's because as a child, I remember his passion, his determination, and the fact that he came from great wealth, but was always looking to address the poverty in the country and education and issues like that. And he's really stuck with me through the years.
We're entering a quick fire round and then a longer question at the end.
Okay.
But what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
You know, I don't know if there's one book like that, but I think what principals should do is read. I think that it's what we tell kids, and I tell it to adults as well, is that, you know, read everything from cereal boxes to magazines, to books, to whatever. But, you know, just be in the constant habit of it.
What do you do for fun?
Basketball. I play basketball and have for many years, typically Saturday mornings, hopefully one other day a week. But that's my one passion.
Love it. Yeah. Are you a one, a two, three, four, a five?
I would say I'm probably like a three.
Ah, the small forward. Very versatile. I like it. If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Maybe basketball. Yeah, I think that, you know, I always had dreams of being better than I am, and probably still have those dreams. But yeah, that's what comes to mind immediately.
What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just one day?
Probably keep it mighty, which is something that we say around here all the time. And it sort of encompasses how we feel about a whole lot of things that, you know, forward, strength, clarity, writing, it all comes together to form like a mighty nation, a mighty city, mighty writers. It's a really powerful word for us.
You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. Tim, how would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Well, clearly writing would be right up there with one of them. I would want to have a library that is interactive, that is, you know, cutting edge, that kids want to go to, not a library where, you know, you pull a book off a shelf and sit there until the bell rings. So to make it really sort of interactive and all of that. So those two things for certain. And then, you know, the big thing are the people you hire. So, you know, I would look for people that have a lot of passion and a lot of determination and see teaching as not just a job.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way to get a hold of me is email. You can find it on our website at mightywriters.org. It's T. Whitaker at mightywriters.org. All our classes and everything we offer is right there on the website.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Tim. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Tim in the search bar. And the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Tim, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, Dan. I enjoyed it.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across? Links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well. If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.